Terry Cowgill's a contributing op-ed writer, a Connecticut News Junkie. He's a retired managing editor at the Berkshire Edge. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter, like I do, at Terry Cowgill. Terry, thank you so much for coming back. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, Joe.
Now, Terry, you've been living in the Fifth for 32 years. Talk a little bit about the demographics. They've changed a little bit in the district. And tell us, why was the Fifth voted the least Democratic district in the state?
Well, it's that is in terms of voter registration. So, and the reason it is the least Democratic in the state, I believe, is the fact that you have some rural areas in Northwest Connecticut, which lean Republican. You have some suburbs in the Waterbury area that also lean Republican. You have sections of Torrington and Winstead that have lots of Republicans. So it's and Watertown places. Watertown, for example, is there have been a lot of state Republican office holders who come from Watertown. So it's just that there's a fair number of Republicans, but there are a lot of Democrats in the cities. And, you know, that's because and now especially there are a lot of Democrats because in 2000, after the 2000 census, you know, the sixth district, which was Nancy Johnson's district, that was eliminated. And so the fifth and sixth were merged. And that meant that the fifth district added New Britain. And I say it New Britain, not New Britain, like some people. the New Britain, Bristol and Meriden were added to the fifth district. And that was huge because they really lean Democratic.
Yep.
So it's a very interesting district, and it is almost always competitive, although it has not been actually in Republican hands or in Democratic hands since Chris Murphy defeated Nancy Johnson in 2006. So every year, that's why I like living here, because it's almost always competitive, and it's interesting to write about.
Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, I've told you this before. I love your writing. The article came out this morning, and I kid you not, I think I saw it literally as it was posting. And yeah, Terry, that's how much of a fan I am. I just wait for it to be released. But I saw it, and I thought, oh, boy, we definitely got to talk about this. Now, how much can you attribute the closeness of the race between Jevonna Hayes and George Allen based on his moderate views on abortion, which really seems to be the central issue that Democrats are running on?
Yeah, they have accused George Logan of being an extremist on abortion, but I don't really buy that, because basically he said that he does support Roe versus Wade, and all Roe versus Wade does is it gives the states to regulate abortion after the point of viability, which is usually after the fifth month or so. And if that's extreme, then I guess, you know, opposition to any regulation to abortion would be considered extreme. So I don't really see that as the case. But you know, he's really, Logan is running a disciplined campaign. Now, I've not seen any noise made about him being a carpetbagger, because as you know, he did not live in the district until recently.
Yep.
And he moved to Meriden into a relative's house, I think maybe his uncle's, and then got an apartment. But he is a much better campaigner, and I think a much better Republican candidate than some of the others we're seeing out there, like Leora Levy. And I think Stefanowski is really struggling, especially after that. Speaking of something that just came out, you know, that poll that was just released by Quinnipiac that found Lamont up by 17 points over Stefanowski. And it also found Blumenthal up over Leora Levy by the same amount, which is that's really bad news, because that poll, the Quinnipiac poll, by the way, is the sampling is I think it's like 1,200 likely voters, not registered voters, but likely voters. So it's a narrower sampling of voters who are more likely to show up on Election Day, or perhaps even already have cast their ballots.
Right. So, last week's poll that came out from Emerson College and The Hill and WTNH showed Bob down 10 to Ned Lamont, and showed Leora Levy down 13 to Blumenthal, which already Terry was like, oh, geez, that's not good. To have seen this, Paul, that's literally how I started the show. I had literally just been sent those numbers from the Quinnipiac poll, and I thought, oh, does it get any worse? Does it get any worse for these guys? There's no way. I mean, at this point, that I suspect that it's very much going to be a double digit beatdown for both candidates, who of course also really suffer from the lack of name recognition.
Yeah, they suffer from a lack of name recognition. That's certainly true. Particularly with, that's a double-edged sword, right? Because Richard Blumenthal has high name recognition. His approval ratings are actually not as high as this particular poll found him, as I said, 14 points ahead of Leora Levy. But I think that you would find that his approval ratings are not as high as what he got in that particular poll, because a lot of people who don't even like him will hold their nose and vote for him because they don't like the alternative.
We are on the phone with Terry Cowgilly, contributing op-ed writer at Connecticut News Junkie. He's the retired managing editor at the Berkshire Edge. Give him a follow on Twitter at Terry Cowgill. Terry, Bob Stefanowski trailing in this poll 57-40. More recently, he's sort of gotten into the culture war, talking about parental rights and talking about transgendered athletes, competing in the sport of their birth sex. He fired two advisors about 10 weeks out. And I literally, for the last few weeks, all I've been asking for, and I think it's reasonable for anybody who wants to vote for Bob, that you have to ask, like, what would you be doing different than Ned Lamont? He finally came out with this $3 billion package. I'm curious your thoughts. Do you think it's too little too late?
Yeah, it might be too little too late. It's so hard to focus on any one thing with Bob because he just keeps throwing out all these different strategies. And it's the kitchen sink approach. And now I see that, he's come out with a tax relief package of $3 billion some odd dollars. And most of that would come, it would be funded by the surplus.
Right.
We've got a surplus of $5.4 billion. And he would fund it that way. The biggest proposal that I see coming out of this is to allow homeowners to deduct $10,000 from local property taxes from their state income taxes.
Yep,
that's a pretty big deal because $10,000 for many of us, because it's not a flat state income tax. So for many of us, $10,000 could actually bump us down into a lower bracket. So it could be a fairly big deal for some people. I just don't know whether it's going to how much it's going to sell. And he's also floated some other things Lamont and the Democrats are campaigning on this the $640 million in mostly temporary tax relief that they've already done, and they presented in this revised budget that's coming out. So I don't see this as having a big impact on the race. I mean, it got some attention. Certainly it made the front pages of most of the papers when he came out with this proposal. But my sense is it will fade largely because Bob will probably switch and attack Ned Lamont for something else tomorrow. And then it'll be off the radar screen.
Yeah, this was actually coming off him accusing Ned Lamont of burying an FBI investigation, as if Ned Lamont is the most powerful man on earth because he's the governor of Connecticut.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, the FBI and the Department of Justice are federal agencies. He can't do that. And the thing is, it would be one thing if he had presented some evidence that Lamont had tried to bury some sort of investigation. Maybe he buried an investigation on the state level, so you could say, well, he'll do it on the federal level. But even so, I don't see any evidence that that's happening. And so that's another tactic that he's taken in trying to attack Lamont is the whole corruption issue. And there is some some meat to the bone there, because it's you know, you do have the state pier in New London and Constantine Diamantis and that whole mess.
Yep.
But the idea that Lamont is some sort of money-grubbing, corrupt guy who is on the take, it just doesn't make any sense. He's independently wealthy. Maybe if you're a diehard Republican and a real conservative and you hate Lamont, you could believe it. But most level-headed people look at that charge and they just go, this doesn't make any sense. Lamont doesn't need the money. He and his wife have a net worth of, you know, probably over $1 billion. So it just makes no sense at all.
Yeah, as you said, Bob seems to be just sort of throwing the kitchen sink, hoping one of these things will stick. And like I've been saying all along, like, talk about tolls, talk about a tax plan, give us something. He had, you know, he kept referring to the idea of sort of dipping in to the surplus and giving it back, which personally I think is a terrible idea, because as you look the way things project out over the next decade, we're looking at massive deficits. And so that money in the rainy day fund, I think, eventually is going to be used to bail us out. And as much as I'm sure you would like some of that cash, I certainly would. I don't know if that's the right move for Connecticut to make right now anyway.
Yeah, I don't. Because if you do spend a good chunk of the surplus, then in the out years when there are big deficits that come up, there's going to have to be big cuts to the state budget if there's not a big cushion in the rainy day fund. So, you know, things that people really care about, like roads and bridges, for example, those could be put on reserve. But I do think that I'm a little surprised that he hasn't used the tolls issue and said, you know, he tried to do that, but, you know, we succeeded in stopping him. And in fact, his campaign manager, Patrick Sasser, led the charge on that from Stanford. And I'm a little surprised also that they just don't have a better strategy. And I think when you lose a seasoned strategist like Liz Karantowicz, I forget the name of the campaign manager that they had before, who is a state rep, former state rep, these people know what they're doing. Patrick Sasser, you know, led the tolls thing. He also spearheaded the election of Ryan Fazio down in that Senate district that includes Greenwich.
Yep.
That wasn't that big an achievement, because that seat had been in Republican hands for a long time, except for like 4 years when a Democrat just had it. So he really needs the lack of seasoned veterans running his campaign really shows. And I think when the history books are written, that'll be sort of the storyline, is that he just tried to limp along without a really experienced campaign staff.
I really like Liz and was very surprised by that. She's been great, and I thought had been great for him, but obviously he had other plans. Terry, last thing I want to ask you about, in the poll last week that we saw, the Emerson College poll, 40% of people mentioned the economy is the number one thing on their mind. In this new Quinnipiac poll, 32% said inflation, 20% said taxes. So for all intents and purposes, 52% of people cited the economy in this Quinnipiac poll. In the Emerson College poll, it was 40%. The fact that Ned Lamont has such a significant lead says to me most people don't have an issue with the economy in Connecticut. I know things aren't great, but they're not terrible.
No, they're not as bad as you might think. And there are probably some people who are very concerned about the economy. They're not thrilled with Ned Lamont, but they'll hold their nose and vote for him. Maybe they're thinking, you know, better the devil I know than the one I don't. That could very well be it.
Connecticut Realtors Association, for one, very much kind of has taken that approach after endorsing Stefanowski in 2018. They've seen what Ned Lamont did for the real estate industry during the pandemic, and they've now endorsed him this fall instead. So you do a good job. That's the kind of thing that should happen. Terry, always always love talking to you. Appreciate your time. Again, make sure you check him out on Twitter, at Terry Cowgill, a contributing op-ed writer at Connecticut News Junkie. Make sure you check out his latest article about the fighting fifth. Terry Cowgill, always a pleasure. Have a good time, and we'll talk before the election for sure.
Thank you. My pleasure, Joe. Take care.
You too. Jamie won her primary with a resounding 90% of the vote in the district's 17 towns and cities. She previously served as Darien's first select woman for 10 years, where she kept property taxes among the lowest in the state. Jamie currently serves on the board of directors of LifeBridge Community Services, a community-based behavioral health center in Bridgeport. She's also on the board of directors of Stamford Emergency Medical Services, and she's an active member of the Stamford-Norwalk State's Attorneys Community Engagement Board. She's a very busy woman. Welcome back, Jamie Stevenson.
Thank you so much for having me today, Joe. I really appreciate that.
Jamie, I've told you before, I still feel the same way. I think you're one of the better candidates running in the state of Connecticut, regardless of party. You've been cross-nominated by the Independent Party, which I think will only help your cause. Do you take that as a testament to the fact that you don't blindly follow your party?
Absolutely. I'm very, very proud of the nomination by the Independent Party. It really exemplifies the kind of leadership that I've tried to role model in my 10 years serving the town of Darien, West Cog, CCM, and as chairman of CIRMA, the Municipal Insurance Agency, working across the aisle with my peers to get stuff done for the people of Connecticut.
It's so important, Jamie. I think especially now, the way this country is so terribly divided, where, you know, we rarely see any bipartisan bills making their way through. This state since 2008 has not had any Republican representation in Congress, in Washington, D.C. at all. And I personally find that and again, it's nothing against Jim Himes. I'm sure he's a wonderful fella. But to me, just sending an entirely blue delegation to Washington for the last 14 years doesn't help. And we're also looking at the possibility, and I'm sure you're thinking about this as well, that if you were to be elected, the Republicans would be in charge and we would have a representative in the majority party.
That's exactly right. Listen, I am all about balanced ideas in government. That's what our founders intended. And to have one party like we have here in Connecticut, strong one-party rule for decades, coupled with our representatives who have been in Washington for a really long time. I'm a firm believer in term limits. I've already signed the federal term limit pledge. If I get there, I retired myself last November as Darien's first selectman after 10 years. So I'm walking that walk. So when you combine an imbalance of political ideas and extremely long tenures, you know, people dig their heels in on their ideology and their agendas. And what I'm hearing across the district is people are very tired of that. It's impacting people's lives in a very negative way. So, you know, I'm looking forward to a successful campaign and election on November 8th, and hopefully we'll get a few more Republicans so we can bring back some balance to the state of Connecticut and to Washington.
You just sort of alluded to it. I was going to ask you about it. I know I follow you on social media. You've been all over the place, showing up pretty much everywhere. And you never say anything divisive. You're just always there, like, for the community. And I think that that's so awesome. You're going on this diner tour. What is it you're hearing most often from your constituents when you're out there?
Our diner tour is awesome. We had a fabulous morning at the Galaxy Diner in Bridgeport last week. And what I'm hearing from people, a lot of the people we spoke to were seniors in the community, people who are retired on a fixed income. And as you can imagine, Joe, they are really hurting. They're very concerned about the high cost of living with high inflation. We haven't even gotten to the heating season yet. They're very concerned about how they're going to be able to heat their homes. And they're watching their retirement savings deplete. So, you know, I see a lot of worry and anxiety in a group of people who really have little ability to change their own circumstance. You know, perhaps the state of Connecticut can look at making some changes to the tax relief system for seniors. I think it would help a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would. You know, I'm looking at these polls that have been out. There was the Emerson College poll. We just saw the Quinnipiac poll. In the Emerson poll, 40% of people specifically said the economy was their number one issue. In this new poll from Quinnipiac, between the economy and taxes, it's 52% called it their main concern. And here's my question for you. How is it that people who say the economy is number one on their list are supporting the Democrats over the Republicans, and obviously the governor race in particular? But do you feel like Ned Lamont and the economy is doing well enough? Again, when it comes to, I think, especially the working poor in Connecticut and knowing where inflation's at, that it's going to be a rough winter for a lot of people.
It really is. You know, I think it's hard to get a real truthful read on the state of the Connecticut economy because of all of the free money that has flown into our state during the COVID pandemic. You know, once we work through the federal relief dollars that came in, those one-time payments, I think we're going to see a very different picture. I know that there still exists an enormous pension problem here in the state of Connecticut. So that was a great question that you asked. Why do people keep electing the same representatives? You know, if you do that, you're going to get the same results. So I really ask people this election cycle, you should ask it everyone, but this one in particular. You know, I think so many things are on a negative trend, particularly across America, that you have to give new leadership, people with fresh ideas, a chance, because we can't keep going on the path that we're on.
My guest is 4th Congressional District Republican candidate Jamie Stevenson. Jamie, I'm not even going to mention your opponent's name. He doesn't need to have it every time I say what you're doing. The website's jamiestevensonforcongress.com. As I mentioned before the break, there's 8 issues on here, and I like your opinions on all of these. Even the one I don't necessarily buy into. I've got 2 kids that are in school. I have a daughter who recently graduated from college, another one who just graduated high school last year. And I understand during the pandemic, it was chaos for everybody. But this whole parental rights thing, again, the parents being villainized or whatever, I get that. That was not well done. But I think for the most part, not really buying the teachers or indoctrinating kids. I know there was obviously the Project Veritas video down at COSCO, but I think that's more the exception than the rule. What are you hearing from parents, and what is your position on parental rights?
Thank you very much for letting me talk about this really important issue. I will tell you that every meeting that I have, every gathering, parents are super concerned about what their kids are being taught in school. And probably to be more clear, they're really concerned that they don't know what their kids are being taught in school anymore. Parents are not very welcome into most of the schools, and it's creating a lot of a concern and anxiety on the part of families. I will tell you that perhaps the egregious bias that we saw from the assistant principal at the Koskob Elementary School, I'm going to hope and pray that that is certainly more the exception rather than the rule. But it raises the questions in the minds of every parent about what in the heck is going on in their kids' schools. When you have an assistant principal that acknowledges that he is biased in his hiring practice, he doesn't hire conservatives, he doesn't hire Catholics, and he doesn't hire anyone under the age of 30. That deserves a deep dive investigation. But I'll also share, because I am in a lot of communication groups with young parents, looking at some of the reading materials that our children now have access to that are sexualizing children at much earlier ages than I, as a mom of 5, that believe in. Just another thing that gets parents very, very concerned about what's happening in our schools. But finally, I want to say that I know that there are awesome teachers out there. I think most teachers are in school teaching the right things, doing the right things for our kids. But we have some problems, and we have to shed light on those, and we have to fix them.
See, Jamie, that's why I like you. Because already I'm like nodding my head like, oh, you know what? You're right. If there's some bad eggs, let's get them out of there. I really am hoping that this Coscob, the principal, I'm hoping this was all taken out of context. Because it is awful. And I got to tell you, discrimination of any form, and I'm sure you agree, is completely unacceptable. Let's move on to the economy. You point out on your website, Jim Himes supported a $1.9 trillion spending spree, which has led to this massive inflation. Jamie, what's the solution, quick short answer, to solving the problem with inflation?
We have to stop spending. We have to government does have to spend on things, but we have to prioritize our spending on things that are really going to help the American people. Certainly not this last quote-unquote Inflation Reduction Act that is spending on all of these Green New Deal policies and hiring a bunch of new IRS agents. So that's what I did when I was first selectman. We had a budget, we prioritized our spending, and there was stuff we couldn't do because we couldn't afford it.
Last thing, we got just a couple minutes left. This issue keeps coming up with all these other Republican candidates. You don't have this issue. You are for marriage equality, and you are pro-choice. I'd like you to just yell that to the rafters so that nobody confuses Jamie Stevenson's position, as they've been doing to George Logan, as they've done to Bob Stefanowski. Just lay that out there and let people know where you stand on those important issues.
It's really simple for me. There's a lot of reasons why I am a Republican. But first and foremost, because I believe in freedom, and I don't think you can pick and choose which freedoms you want to support and which ones you don't. So I absolutely believe in a woman's freedom to make decisions about her own body and for people to choose who they want to love.
I love that. That's awesome. Last thing, let's talk taxes. What is your position on taxes? I got a feeling I know what it is, and I think I like it.
Well, you know, funny thing is, taxes just keep going up. They never go down, right? And certainly here in Connecticut, where we have a big problem with property tax, you know, people are very concerned about the high property taxes that they pay. And my opponent hasn't fought for the reinstatement of the deductions for the state and local taxes, which I certainly will, absolutely, as it relates to local property tax, for sure. We all invest so much in our communities, in our, you know, for infrastructure, our roads, our sidewalks, our schools, our parks. And I think that we should get some credit for that on our tax returns.
I really, that issue is I'm very sensitive to, because my taxes and where that deduction used to be were in sync, and they're no longer. And that is awful. Jamie Stevenson, always love talking to you. I appreciate your time. Her website is jamiestevensonforcongress.com. This is a very good Republican candidate. Please check out her website if you're in the 4th, and please consider voting for Jamie Stevenson. Jamie, I really appreciate your time. I know you're busy. Thank you for coming on and allowing us to get to know you a little bit better. And good luck November 8th.
Thanks for having me. And come out to the Andros Diner in Fairfield on Friday at 10 o'clock and say hello.
Oh, awesome. Jamie, love to meet you. And again, I think your candidacy is one everybody in the country should be looking at as the model of what this should look like. All right.
I appreciate that, Joe. Thanks.